The Measure of Everyday Life is made possible by support from RTI International, an independent nonprofit institute dedicated to improving the human condition through research, development, and technical services. More information at rti.org.
Wherever you are, I hope you're having a good evening, and welcome to our show. Back in 1906, Dr. Alois Alzheimer looked at the brain tissue of a woman who had died after exhibiting severe mental challenges. That turning point led to the discovery of what we know today as Alzheimer's disease, a progressive brain disease that slowly destroys memory and thinking skills, and eventually even the ability to carry out the simplest tasks of daily living. The disease currently affects roughly 5 million people in the United States. And it's also been a prominent topic in popular culture. Here's an example from a recent documentary. In this clip that you're about to hear, you're going to hear a little bit about the struggle and the journey that a husband and wife have faced in dealing with the disease. This is an excerpt from a documentary called A Marriage to Remember.
Watching the person that you love so much, who has been, you know, so much a part of your life. You know, it's nice she smiles when she sees me. Thank God for her smile. That's huge. But there's a lot more that, you know, I used to get from her that she would do for me that's gone. My nickname is Fast Eddie, and it's because I tend to just get things done in a hurry. And Bam's favorite question is, where's Ed? And I can answer it 100 times a day. Just getting her out of the house and into the car to go shopping is it's a big deal. And her walk is now a shuffle, not a walk, so it's just slow, slow, slow. And don't ever let her know that you're impatient, which I'm sure there's several times a week when she knows that I'm impatient with her. And she knows it. You know she knows it. And of course I feel terrible when that happens.
Yeah, sometimes if I'm the first thing she sees in the morning, I don't actually think she recognizes.
That's beginning.
Well, we thank the producers for the permission to use this powerful clip. To learn more about their project, we encourage you to visit www.geniusofcaring.com. So, this is clearly a devastating disease. It also does not seem to be affecting everyone equally. We already know that people are likely to be older than 60 when diagnosed, for example. We also know that, and now we increasingly see evidence that there are racial and ethnic differences in the disease, with African Americans and Hispanics or Latinos in the U.S. exhibiting worse outcomes related to Alzheimer's than non-Hispanic whites. Here on The Measure of Everyday Life, we talk about how social science research can unlock answers to pressing problems. Differences in Alzheimer's disease outcomes among various racial and ethnic groups are a pressing concern, and so we've organized today's episode as a detective's quest to solve a mystery. Here today to help us understand this issue are two researchers, Lisa Lines and Joshua Weiner. Each has been a co-author on an important recent report on Alzheimer's disease and racial and ethnic disparities. Ms. Noha Sharif also co-authored the report. Dr. Lisa Lines is a health services researcher at RTI International. She holds a doctorate from the University of Massachusetts Medical School and also has held appointments at organizations such as Boston Health Economics. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Joshua Weiner is Distinguished Fellow at RTI International and has served as Director of the Aging, Disability, and Long-Term Care Program there. He's a sociologist by training, and he holds degrees from Harvard and the University of Chicago. And he's worked with such institutions as the Brookings Institution and the Urban Institute, as well as a variety of state and federal agencies. It's really great to have you here, Josh.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
So, Josh, I'd actually like to start with you and to ask a question that might be important for some of our listeners who are new to this disease and this topic. You know, why is Alzheimer's disease an important issue in the U.S. today? And in relation to that, you know, why are disparities and related to the disease also important to take a look at?
Well, first of all, as I think was shown by the clip, Alzheimer's disease is a devastating illness for the individuals involved and a great burden on their caregivers. And it's not just something that happens to a very small number of people. As you noted, over 5 million Americans of all ages have Alzheimer's disease. And if you live to 85, about 1 in 3 people have Alzheimer's disease. And as the population ages, the projections are that by 2050, the number of people with Alzheimer's disease will nearly triple to about 13.8 million. From a society and government perspective, financing the care for those people is a major burden and one that the government largely pays for. So about 80% of people in nursing homes have Alzheimer's disease. About half of people in assisted living facilities have Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's affects a large number of people, and as the population ages, more and more people who are elderly will be people who are African-American, Hispanic, or Asian. Currently, about 14% of the elderly population falls into those three categories, but by 2050, about a third of the elderly population will be either Black, Hispanic, or Asian. And that's not the the highest level that it's going to be. In fact, it will continue to rise because in 2050 we'll be a majority population. So the literature generally shows that minorities suffer from a higher proportion of Alzheimer's disease and a variety of other adverse effects. And so that's been a major concern to policymakers. And so our research project started with a project with the National Alzheimer's Project Act Advisory Commission, which was established to provide advice to the U.S. Department Health and Human Services on Alzheimer's disease. They wanted to know what was known and what could be done to address these disparities. We also have a longstanding contract with the Administration on Aging, which has projects, grants to the states and other organizations to improve services for people with Alzheimer's disease. And so we worked with AOA on that as well to try to figure out what could be done in this area.
Great. Okay. Well, given all that important work, you know, listeners are going to want to know what you found, particularly in this most recent report. You looked at available evidence and studies and brought everything together to reach some overarching conclusions. You know, Lisa, I'm wondering if you can offer for us a picture, and if you can describe how it is that Alzheimer's disease seems to vary by race and ethnicity.
Sure. So first of all, it's more prevalent. In African Americans, it's about twice as prevalent than in whites, and about 1.5 times more prevalent in Hispanics than in whites. But there are also indications that the disease is underdiagnosed, not just in African Americans and Hispanics, but in general. But the underdiagnosis issue is actually more pronounced in minorities. We have data from the Health and Retirement Study that looked at a cohort of people aged 55 and older, all of whom had independently confirmed cognitive impairment. And of those people, half of the whites had been told by a doctor that they had a memory-related condition, but only 33% of African-Americans and 34% of Hispanics had been told by a doctor that they had some sort of memory-related disease. African Americans, Asians, Hispanics, and other minorities are underrepresented in clinical trials, which is an issue because the clinical trial results are how we figure out what medications are going to work in which populations. So that underrepresentation may be due to clinical factors like having complications that disqualify people from participating, possibly language barriers, possibly lack of trust in some communities around medical research. You know, we have a legacy of the Tuskegee syphilis study, which certainly has led to mistrust in some communities around the medical system in general, and especially medical research. So that's a pretty big issue. African Americans and Hispanics are less likely than whites to get anti-dementia medications, antidepressants, and other medications that might help with managing behavioral symptoms. And that's a quality of care issue. Related to that, African Americans and Hispanics are more likely to be in a nursing home than whites and to be in a lower quality nursing home than whites. Again, another quality issue in the quality of care. African Americans self-report that they have more impairment and more disease burden than white people. At least among some populations, for example, Latinos in Philadelphia, we know that one study found that there was a younger age at onset and worse cognitive impairment at diagnosis. So sometimes there's quite a bit of a lag between development of symptoms and then diagnosis, and that seems to be extended in some minority groups. We see significantly higher costs for older African Americans and Hispanics with dementia than whites. That has partly to do with the kinds of services that are used. For example, African Americans and Hispanics are less likely to use hospice services. They're more likely to use home health and inpatient hospital stays, and they have longer lengths of stay and more physician visits.
Okay. Well, thanks, Lisa, for that really excellent description and summary of where we are at the moment with regards to the distribution of various outcomes regarding Alzheimer's disease. All this really paints a very troubling picture then, and it begs a question, why? Now, this is a question you've started to hint at, Lisa and Josh, in your earlier remarks, but we're going to leave that as a bit of a cliffhanger for the moment and actually come back to that right after the break. We do need to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to hear more about this social science quest. It's a quest to understand and to address disparities in Alzheimer's disease. We're talking today with Dr. Lisa Lines and Dr. Josh Weiner. You're listening to The Measure of Everyday Life.
If you're struggling to pay the mortgage, Making Home Affordable is a free government resource that can make it easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is 90.7 FM WNCU.
Welcome back to The Measure of Everyday Life. We're talking today with two researchers who study health services systems. Dr. Lisa Lines and Dr. Josh Weiner are both researchers at RTI International. Together with a third author, Noha Sharif, they've published an important report on Alzheimer's disease. That report helps us to understand how social relationships might affect the illness and how to understand disparities generally with regards to Alzheimer's. Now, before the break, we spent a fair amount of time mentioning the word disparities, and it's a word that we've mentioned on this show previously, but it's always useful to define our terms, and I know, Lisa, you had a particularly useful reference for us in terms of thinking about how it is we might actually define what we mean by disparities. Would you mind sharing that for our listeners? I think they might find that helpful.
Sure. So the definition that I like to use comes from the Institute of Medicine report, Unequal Treatment, Confronting Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Healthcare, published in 2003. Mm-hmm. And they defined disparities as healthcare differences, racial or ethnic differences in the quality of healthcare that are not due to clinical needs, preferences, or the appropriateness of an intervention.
Okay, so we're really talking about patterns here that are somewhat unwarranted. These are patterns that we ought to worry about from an equity standpoint. And I appreciate you making that distinction from just instances where there are differences between particular groups. Okay, so we talked about some of those disparities. In fact, you outlined quite a few, really, with regards to Alzheimer's outcomes and care. And it's a long list, and it's one that I think many listeners are sitting there wondering why this is the case. And we started to point towards some answers, but now I think it'd be great to really outline some of those a bit further, because that's exactly what you pulled together in this report. So, Lisa, I'll turn back to you. What have you all been able to find regarding possible explanations for the racial and ethnic patterns that we see in this area?
Well, the explanations that we found in the literature fall into six main categories: measurement issues, cultural factors, genetics, behavioral factors, poverty, and barriers to accessing medical care. So in terms of measurement issues, educational quality was historically worse for many African Americans, especially in the South, especially prior to 1954 when the schools were desegregated. So even adjusting for the number of years of education, if you're doing some statistical analysis, it may not control for differences in educational quality. And that measurement bias is really affected by lower literacy and education levels, also lack of test-taking experience and stress related to test-taking. Maybe different degrees of acculturation also play a role, and having language issues, when instruments are translated to different languages, if there are issues with that, that can pose a barrier to good diagnosis. And some instruments used to diagnose Alzheimer's disease have what is known as differential item functioning, when an item on a questionnaire is perceived differently by different people. For example, one instrument that was in use for some time, not so much now, but it was used at one time, and it's called the Boston Naming Test. One of the items that respondents were asked to identify in the naming test was a hangman's noose, and that would certainly have very different implications for elderly African Americans than for whites. Hmm. And so there are cultural issues around what people think of in terms of natural aging processes. And so, certainly some people think that cognitive impairment is a natural part of aging that you can't do anything about. And then they may not realize that there are things that can be done to improve well-being, even if there may not be any cure. The other related part of that cultural factor is that the caregiving structures are often quite different. Asian, African American, and Hispanic communities, people often depend more on informal care, and caregivers may lack knowledge about when to seek treatment. We know that there are genetic differences, but the evidence is certainly inconsistent. Genetics does play a role in the development of Alzheimer's disease, but probably because race and ethnicity are more cultural than biological constructs, that evidence about genetic differences between African Americans and whites, for example, is inconsistent. But there was one really interesting study of Yoruba in Nigeria and African Americans in Indianapolis. And they used the same research methods in both communities, and they found significantly higher incidence and prevalence of dementia and Alzheimer's disease among African Americans, about twice as high, and that the genetic factor that was associated with higher risk of Alzheimer's disease in African Americans was not found for Yoruba. In terms of behavioral factors, most of the cardiovascular disease and other risk factors are more common in African Americans and Hispanics. For example, diabetes, hypertension, high fat intake, high cholesterol, smoking, alcohol misuse, atrial fibrillation, low folate, congestive heart failure, stroke, obesity, all of these are more common in African Americans and Hispanics than whites. There's no conclusive link between those risk factors and Alzheimer's disease, but there are associations with cognitive impairment in general and vascular dementia in particular. And certainly some of the disparities that we see are probably related to poverty, whether that was poverty in early life or early life in adulthood or just adulthood. Certainly early life poverty affects educational attainment and cognitive development. And differences in we know that differences in parental socioeconomic status do predict later dementia. In the 2006 Health and Retirement Survey that I mentioned earlier, There was a much higher prevalence of cognitive impairment in African Americans, Hispanics, and whites who had socioeconomic status indicators such as less than 12 years of education, income less than $18,000 a year, living in a rural location in childhood. But those effects that we saw across all three groups were actually stronger among African Americans and Hispanics. So the effects of poverty are disproportionately felt in African American and Hispanic communities. And poverty certainly has an effect on the ability to access medical care. But there are other barriers to accessing medical care as well, such as language issues, mistrust of the medical system. I mentioned the Tuskegee syphilis study earlier, and the lack of health literacy. Some of these problems are common across racial and ethnic groups, but some are specific to African Americans and Hispanics. And in Asian communities, for example, substantial stigma exists around Alzheimer's disease, and that can interfere with getting help and social support, especially for caregivers.
Gosh, so what's fascinating about this discussion today is that we're focused in on this example of Alzheimer's, but yet through that, it's sort of a window onto social dynamics, you know, more broadly, and we're seeing some consistency here and other ideas that we've heard previously and we hear echoing throughout social science. Measures are imperfect. Income and education and culture all sometimes vary and matter. There's ongoing concerns about people being biased and discrimination obviously being something that's real. And also the notion that a lot of these factors are relate to one another. They're interrelated and affect one another. So that's it's really a fascinating picture. Well, with that, I'm wondering, if we can talk just for a minute about what we might be able to do. Out of this research and literature review, I'm wondering what you both might have learned about potential interventions to address some of these differences. Josh, what do we know about intervening with different racial and ethnic groups? And what do we know that could be helpful here?
So that's a great question. I just wanted to add one additional area to what Lisa was talking about. And that is racial and ethnic discrimination. Surprisingly, there really have been no studies looking at the impact of racial and ethnic discrimination in healthcare or in specifically on Alzheimer's disease. But certainly we all know that those are major issues in America today and have been and probably will continue to be.
Well, that's a really important new contribution from your report also and in sort of signaling that. I thank you for raising that. So in terms of actually trying to address that, Josh, what do we seem to know at this point?
So there haven't been very many studies that have tried to look at interventions to address these disparities. There have been quite a number of studies evaluating interventions to deal with these kinds of racial and ethnic disparities generally in healthcare, but not so much in Alzheimer's disease. What those studies tend to focus on is the cultural competency of the healthcare provider, the health system, or both. Especially as Lisa pointed out, Alzheimer's disease takes place within a family context, within a social context, and it's important that providers recognize the differences in social relationships. Obviously, for Hispanics, that means understanding Spanish, being able to communicate with the caregivers and the person with Alzheimer's disease in Spanish. It means recognizing the different family relationships. So, for example, in Korean families, the eldest son is really the decision maker in terms of that kind of decision making about care for the person with dementia. And so there have been a number of efforts to try to bring that kind of cultural understanding and competency into interventions to help caregivers. One in particular, the REACH study, Resources for Enhancing Alzheimer's Caregiver Health, has been particularly noteworthy in terms of trying to reduce disparities for African Americans, and has had a fair amount of success in doing that. But really the key, I think, comes back to this cultural competency and then going the step beyond that to person-centered care, to really trying to design the intervention so that it hears the voice of the individual with Alzheimer's disease and their caregivers.
It's really helpful, you know, Josh. And I have an additional follow-up question there, which I'll come back to in just a minute, with regards to larger-scale systems reforms that we might also see that could be useful. But before we do that, Lisa, I want to just quickly ask you, for listeners who are interested in knowing about the research methods you used, you pulled together available research studies and did a review. You know, this was more than just a quick Google search to come up with some ideas, correct?
Yeah. Right. And so our search focused on people with dementia. We required that all the studies that we included in our search have evidence of racial or ethnic disparities or describe interventions to address disparities. We reviewed more than 118 peer-reviewed research articles and nine books and reports, and then synthesized those findings into our paper.
Great. Okay. So really extensive and very useful work. And I applaud you all on pulling these conclusions together. Just a final question then, Josh. I think we've really begun to paint a picture about societal influences that might be shaping this disease. And I imagine at least some of what you've learned about health systems, about discrimination in society more broadly, about related forces, all of that probably has implication for diseases beyond Alzheimer's as well. Now, are there large-scale systems reforms that we could be considering that might help address not only disparities in Alzheimer's disease, but also in other diseases as well?
I think there are. I think one of the big takeaways from the study is that America is becoming a more diverse country, and people are differing in many different ways. And the real challenge is how do we deal with that diversity? And so I think, to me, there are three main lessons. One is that we need to be moving more towards a person-centered care system where we really try to hear what the individual wants, what's important to them, and try to fashion our healthcare system to meet those needs. Second, that a healthcare model, which we've had in the past, that only looks at physician and hospital services is wholly inadequate for the kinds of chronic diseases that we now face. And so we need to be thinking more broadly about integrating long-term care and other social services into the system. And thirdly, we need to be thinking about long-term care and its financing and delivery. We have a system now with financing in terms of Medicare where if you have a heart attack, basically you're eligible for Medicare and all kinds of government finance services that will help pay for the care that you need. But if you're unlucky enough to get Alzheimer's disease, then there's no government help until you impoverish yourself and become eligible for Medicaid. The private long-term care insurance market is collapsing, and so many people, not just people with Alzheimer's disease, but with a wide range of long-term care needs, are basically left on their own, and that's creating a great difficulty, and as the population ages, more and more people will have to deal with those problems.
Well, I want to thank you, Josh, for that. And thank you both for sharing your ideas with listeners today. It's really been a pleasure to have you both on the show.
Our pleasure.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Well, we need to wrap up there for today. We need to, in addition to thanking you both, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in, as always. We hope that you're finding the show to continue to be compelling, each week as we cover different topics and meet new people. You can find us not only on the radio, but also on social media. We're on Twitter, at Measure Radio, and on Facebook. And you can find me there on Twitter as well, at Brian Southwell. Enjoy the rest of your week, and stay curious out there.
The The Measure of Everyday Life is made possible by support from RTI International, an independent, nonprofit institute dedicated to improving the human condition through research, development, and technical services. More information at rti.org.